Welcome to the Talking to Grandma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, and we have a great episode for you today. Over the years, we disconnect from ourselves, our ser, the person we are before society and family and insecurities tell us who to be. This can mean losing language and culture from our lives. In this episode, we talk with Robin Moreno about her new book, Get Rooted, and what it means to find our way back to our whole and unbreakable selves. Robin Moreno is a storyteller, curanderismo practitioner, meditation teacher, and mama of two. Her new book, Get Rooted, comes out on June 6, 2023 from Hachiko. Believing that young people can't be what they can't see, Robin has worked tirelessly as a passionate storyteller, mentor, and thought leader to create and elevate empowering stories about Latinas via her podcast, Get Rooted with Robin Moreno. And via her books, including Borderline Personalities, A New Generation of Latinas Dish on Sex, Sass, and Cultural Shifting by HarperCollins. The native Texan currently lives in the Hudson Valley of New York with her family. Visit robinmoreno.com for free meditations, to sign up for her newsletter, and check out her upcoming events and offerings. Enjoy this very special conversation with my dear friend, Robin. Welcome to the show, Robin. I am so glad to have you here.
Oh my gosh, Vero, it's so great to see you and talk with you. And I'm really excited about our conversation. And it's really just nice to reconnect.
Yeah. I want to take us and our audience back and doing a bit of time travel to start off with. I remember when we met, I was a little Chicanita who had moved from Texas to New York at 21 years old. And I just felt like I was being swallowed up by this big city that I'd never experienced before. I was living in the Lower East Side on Clinton Street, and I found your shop on the corner of where we lived. It was called A Little Wicked. And I always, every time I went in there, I always felt a sense of warmth and belonging in that space. I love seeing you. I love seeing your sister. I love seeing my culture and identity represented in fashion and beauty. So for me, you've always been a beacon of light and what it means to be rooted in identity and culture. And I am so thrilled to be in conversation with you today.
Oh, thank you, Vero. And it's weird how life just takes us on these journeys. And we'll talk about my book, which was a spiritual journey that I embarked on. But I don't know, it's just amazing. The older I get, I'm just amazed about how the threads and connections, we don't lose them. They just sort of keep interweaving. And it's really amazing the way that we've reconnected again. And I'm really excited. And I like everything that you've been doing. It just dovetails with everything I think that I'm sure your listeners and I care about. So I'm really just really proud of your work. And I'm really happy that we're having this conversation.
Thank you so much. And your book is just so amazing. And I think super relevant to the work that we're doing at the Language Preservation Project, which is really understanding how we've been disconnected from ourselves, how we've been disconnected from our identity and our culture, and how that has impacted us and how we can return to that sense of belonging and that sense of self. Your book is called Get Rooted, Reclaim Your Soul, Serenity, and Sisterhood Through the Healing Medicine of the Grandmothers. It comes out on June 6, 2023, today when this episode is airing. So everybody, please, please order your book. And it's also the day after my birthday. So I have given myself the
Gemini
present. Yes, Gemini.
I'm a Gemini too.
Oh, okay. So that it all makes sense now. So this book is really relatable, powerful, transformative. I want to start with the author's note. You share, this is a book about spiritual reclamation, and I hope it inspires you to rediscover, learn about, and practice medicine from your own sacred lineage. How did you find your way back to your own sacred lineage?
Gosh, that is such a good question. I grew up like you in Texas, Tejana, and I've always been a spiritual person. I believe we all are. I can't speak for everyone, but I truly believe that, you know, we're with spirit in whatever way that makes sense for us, right? And I grew up in this interesting way where we were Catholic on my mom's side, so like communion and all that. And but also my great grandmother was what would we would call a curandera. So she was like the healer of the neighborhood, right? And so people would come see her, and she would do she would read your cards, or she could do past herbs, and she had you know, she could pass the huevo and get rid of things like mal de ojo, you know. And I totally was like, yeah, that's, I knew it, but it didn't, I don't know, it didn't really land with me because she passed. I was lucky enough for one to actually know my abuelita, which in this day and age, because we have kids later, you don't always have that connection, but I get to know my abuelita. I remember her. And I don't know what I really thought of her. I thought she was like kind of cool. I think she was maybe weird. She spoke only Spanish and I did not speak Spanish. And that was a disconnection because she spoke only Spanish. And so I couldn't really ask her questions. I loved her and she made amazing tortillas and I had a good vibe, but I was like, okay, whatever, abuelita. And I would just like run around the yard. And I grew up with this, I would say, duality, like many Mexican Americans. We have like this like Mexican American and this blending. It's sort of this like, you know, Chicanx culture, this Tejana culture, right? Where it made perfect sense for my mom, who was always pretty Catholic, to also, when shit hit the fan, go see a curandera or curandero, curandere, you know, when things happen. So I was fully aware of, I guess, what we would call these old healing ways, but I think I thought it was old fashioned. And as I moved into the world, as I moved into sort of great, like, I don't know, white dominant society, honestly, I always had my spirituality. I would always see it through the stars. I would always see it through nature. That's who I connected more with, really. And as I got older, I started looking, I guess, to more like yoga or Buddhism even, right? And those are beautiful modalities. And I don't think it's an either or thing. I truly believe that we're all speaking the same language and we're just saying different, the same thing in a different way, right? But it was, so I studied, I was on that path. I became a certified yoga teacher. I was studying Buddhism. I was meditating a lot. And I don't know, I got to a point in my life, which I guess I could call a midlife / spiritual crisis when I was in like my early to mid 40s. At that time, I was really busy. I looked probably successful. I was like the like hashtag mom boss, like chingona. You know, I was working at a big digital and print media company that was about our community. So that was really important. I was doing a lot of TV at the time. I was just doing a lot of stuff. I'd written a few books already. I had kids. I was married. I was commuting 4 hours a day because this was pre-pandemic and before people got to work from home. And I was and just spinning a lot of plates, excuse my mouth, and they were just falling left and right. Plates, I was dropped, you know, and I was just overwhelmed, but overwhelmed to a point of like, it was hurt. It hurt. It was more than overwhelmed. Like I was hurting. Like my spirit was hurting. My body was hurting. I was just hurting. I was just really hurting. And I just was like, I'm just falling left and right. The ancient Mexica, who people call the Aztecs did never call themselves the Aztecs. They didn't refer to themselves as that. That came later, like centuries later from like an anthropologist or sociologist, historians. But they called themselves the Mexica. So the Mexica, who are is Mexican American, right? Like our ancestors, they had this worldview that the world was slippery slick. And what that meant was that you were going to fall, that it was, and they have this written in these, you know, old codices, you know, where a mother's warning her daughter, be careful, you look that way, you're going to fall. Look this way, you're going to fall. Like the terrain is treacherous as we walk on this life. It is slippery slick. And what I think they meant was that we're going to fall, that life, it happens. Like, you make mistakes. Our weaknesses, our anger, we hurt each other. People betray us. We lose our jobs. Global pandemics come and like just shake our foundation. And so I saw this in my life. I was falling, like literally falling, like left and right on my knees moment. I was like, something spoke to me and I said, I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. I cannot live like this. I cannot work like this. Like something is going on. And so I began to what I call now get rooted. And my cousin, I have a cousin, I have many cousins, I have like 100 cousins, but one cousin that I'm close to actually mostly all my cousins, but one cousin was studying curanderismo. And I was like, curanderismo, like that, rubbing the egg, you know, from like my old fashioned grandma. And you know how stuff lands when it's going to land, right? So it's going to hit you when it's going to hit you. She had a workshop, invited her maestro to come teach some people. And I was super familiar with things that they were talking about, like these cultural conditions, these recognized illnesses, because I understood like envidia. I understood maleojo. I understood empacho. These are words that I had grown up with, right? And so in this workshop, they recommended this book called Woman Who Glows in the Dark. And it's this beautiful book by this Tejana, you know, American-born Tejana nurse from El Paso, who was a nurse and who found her way back to curanderismo. And so I end up quitting my job. I'm reading this book. I'm on a beach in Mexico. And in this book, it says this. It says, there is this condition called susto. It's spelled S-U-S-T-O. The word susto in Spanish means like to scare. Right? To scare. I think like asustar, right? To fright or to be scared. But susto in curanderismo means like a magical fright. And so what she says, it's like a piece of you when you experience a trauma or a great shock will leave your body or it'll freeze. It's your soul, right? And she goes, we call this soul loss. In my culture, we have always known that the soul can be hurt just the way that the body can be hurt. We've known this, and this condition is called soul loss. And you know you have it when you feel something is incomplete, like something's missing. Something's missing. No matter what I do, something's missing. And what you have to do is then do a soul retrieval and bring a piece back to yourself. And when I read those words, Vero, I was like, that's it. That's that. My whole life, I thought I had some undiagnosed illness. Like it didn't matter if I ran a marathon. It didn't matter if I got 2 yoga certifications. It didn't matter that I had beautiful children. It didn't matter that I married someone that I loved. That was in good partnership, healthy partnership. It did not matter that I was nominated for an Emmy, that I had written 3 books, that I was invited to the White House. It didn't matter because I still felt like there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. And once I read those words, my whole body woke up and I'm like, and I said, this is what I have. I think this is maybe what my sisters, I have 3 of them have. And if there is a cure called soul retrieval, that's what I'm going to do. And so I set out on this mission to find my soul. And that's sort of the premise of the book.
Wow. Robin, you gave me chills when you said that, because I think it's just so relatable to a lot of women, a lot of women who come from the Latinx culture, who are raised in the U.S. And it there is this kind of culture that we strive to achieve, right? Around like assimilation, success, accolades, all these things that we think we need without attending to our soul, or as you also mentioned in the book, our ser, like who we are deep down. You mentioned so many things around susto, and it brought this memory back for me of my sister, who after giving birth got into a car accident, and then she started to lose a lot of weight, and all of my mom and my grandma were like, you have susto, like yeah, there's something yeah. wrong here. Yeah. From that. And I remember I was away at college and I walked up and there were these like branches of a tree, like in a cross, as I like pulled up into the driveway. I was like, what's happening in my house? They were doing all of these, you know, like the egg and all these different things of like trying to heal and cure the susto. And I feel also that there were these things, like you mentioned growing up, that I saw, like not my grandmother, but my great grandmother practiced curanderismo, but it's just something that I saw, but wasn't like as present or as elevated as other spiritual practices like Catholicism or other things in our lives. So I related a lot with like coming back to that sacred lineage. In your book, you talk about ser, which we mentioned, which is your true essence, the whole and unbreakable you. How do you find your ser? We have a lot of educators and parents who listen to this podcast. So also, not only how do you find your ser, but how can you teach your children from an early age to know their ser as well?
That's such a beautiful question. That's such a great question. You know, when I started on this path, I was lucky enough to find a spiritual teacher who is actually from Houston, who is you find teachers that they look like you, they make sense to you. And so she's a Chicana, you know, Chingona. She's amazing because she's actually like an Episcopalian priest too. Nice. When we first started studying together, she said, I came to her and I had a lot of self-doubt. I was like, what am I doing? Like, is this for me? Am I crazy? Like, am I just completely bonkers? Because I'm leaving some very understandable, recognizable path of work, right? And I was still working. I was freelancing, but now I'm embarking on like studying curanderismo. Like, most people don't know what it is. Many. Like Latinx do, but many people don't, or they think it's old fashioned. I was in the specter of my great grandmother, who was such a gifted curandera, like by all accounts, like people that I've interviewed that actually knew her, even though this was like, you know, she was old, were like, no, she was very well respected. Like, people would come see her they would see her every week. Like, she was, I was like, I just don't know anything. Like, how, you know, like, I felt so inadequate. And as someone who has spent most of their life trying to be in control and really enjoys being capable, right? As honestly, as like a coping mechanism, this idea that I was a beginner at this point in my life felt really uncomfortable. And I was like, holy shit. And so my teacher said, and I kept saying, I have all this self-doubt. I don't know, man. And she's like, you have to stop. All of that self-doubt is colonized thinking. That's colonized thinking. Okay. We have already been told this, what you'd practice. No, that's not good. You have to do this. What you look like is not good. You have to do this. The way you speak, that doesn't work. You have to do this. And so we already had ingrained, no, you're wrong. You're doing it wrong. It's not enough. Do it this way. And so you're buying into it. And now you're doing it to yourself. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm right. She's right. I'm already stopping. No one's stopping me. There's no curanderismo police that were stopping me. It was me. It was my own fear, insecurity, self of inadequacy, right? That is learned. It's a learned behavior. I was like, wow. And then she said, you have to stay close to your ser. And I was like, what are you talking about? What does that even mean? And she said, your ser, you know, it means to be, right? As a verb, it means to be, right? A state of being. But she said, it is your essence. It's who you are before society comes in and tells you who to be, who your family tells you to be, before all the hurts start piling up and your failures and insecurities. It's your, just like your unsustod self, right? It's your beautiful self. And so we have that, right? We have that. It's underneath, right? And in my mind, I think of like life is like a river with a lot of noise, a lot of movement, but underneath there's another river. And that's actually a phrase that was coined by Clarissa Pinkola Estes from A Woman Who Runs the Wolves. It's called Rio Abajo Rio. It's the river under the river. It's the stillness. It's the second deeper river. And we all have access to that, right? So to me, it's when I get quiet. And I stop the mind. If I think of, just say the mind is the river of thoughts. So then I calm down. I take deep breaths and I imagine that I'm diving deeper. I do a body scan from the top of my head to the noise in the forehead to a quiet in the jaw. I feel ease in the neck. I drop into the heart. And usually for me, it's somewhere in the heart center or just below, like in what I would call the solar plexus. And that is where I find a deeper river of knowing. And this is usually where I can connect to spirit and to my own intuition. And I can ask questions and we can have a conversation from here, from my gut knowing and not from my monkey mind that's always going. For people that want to do that, for kids are closer to their ser. because they're closer to their true nature. They haven't been banged up yet. They haven't been totally shaped by society and hurts and us. And so what I try to do with my kids is don't override them. Even if I don't like what they're saying is activating me, because they can act, they activate you, right? Especially if you're a little unhealed, they'll activate the unhealed parts of yourself. And you're like, is like, they're doing something or they're saying something. I just try to listen and like sit on my hands and not, don't do it that way. You're doing it that wrong. Because usually I'm fearful. Most times I'm motivated by fear and I want them to be safe. I don't want them to be ridiculed. I don't want them to be in trouble. And I just try to sit on my hands and let them fully express themselves. I don't try to shut down their feelings. You know what I mean? Right? Like if they feel bad, my instinct is don't feel bad. It's okay. I'm going to fix it. I try to calm down. It's hard. And I'm just like, yeah, I say nothing and let them speak. Or I say, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. I get that. And just letting them be helps them stay closer to their ser. And guess what? It's going to remind you to stay closer to your ser. If you can just let yourself be, because I feel what happens, Vero, is we have an instinct and then we have a thought that overrides the instinct. So we have a thought that says, I don't want to go to that. Or, hey, maybe I can do that. And then right away, something comes in. It could be our mom. It could be a teacher. It could be our rational adult selves that says, but you have to go because they're expecting you and you said you'd go, or you can't do that. You're everyone's doing it. People are going to think you're crazy. And so what I usually try to do is calm that voice and try to at least give space to that first one. Just at least give it some space and see. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's usually how I try to navigate and stay close to my sid.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And I feel like I have that voice all the time of like the initial idea or thought, and then all of the socialized, like what I should do, or fear-based thinking around how I should act. So that makes a lot of sense. And also how we as parents, as educators as well, so much of our perspective of the world, our healing, our unhealing shows up in the way that we interact with children. It affects them in big and little ways. When you were mentioning about like just letting children are closer to their ser and letting them be, it made me think about my daughter who's 2 years old and she was playing with Play-Doh. And she was having all this fun with the Play-Doh, and then it was time to clean up the Play-Doh. And I was like, we have to put the yellow bucket and the blue in the blue bucket and the red in the red bucket, because otherwise then it's just all going to be mixed up Play-Doh and you don't have colors anymore. And she was so upset. Like, she did not want to separate the colors. She got really upset about it when I was like, you know, taking the blue and the yellow apart and putting the yellow in the yellow. But she was like, no, like it all goes in the same bucket. And it had like this moment, I stepped back and I was like, why am I so insistent that colors, like that you have to separate the colors? And I'm like, you know, this is like a rule that who made up and why does it have to exist? And she clearly doesn't want to do this. And it made me think about just letting children stay closer to their ser, obviously, in moments in which it's important for their safety, like they always have to wear their helmet or they have to, you know, absolutely. Things like that.
Absolutely, of course.
But there are all these other like creative moments or like exploration moments that I can see myself kind of transmitting societal expectations on from an early age.
No, I think that's totally beautiful. And I think it makes sense, right? There was this one time. So I hear you. And I think that was beautiful. That actually got me a little emotional, because you're right. Like we think that we're doing right, because I guess when you said, where did this rule come from? And I think that that's so important for our own exploration, right? As adults, is like, where did this rule come from? And why do I have to do it? I had this instance with my kids where I always brush their hair and I started to get mad. Actually, I was like irritated one morning. I was not sleeping super well. Like one of them was, you know, having trouble sleeping. And I was not 100, to be honest with you. And I was like, so I was getting angry and like, you have to brush your hair. And I was getting more physical that it kind of was, I was like, ooh, that wasn't good. Like I was being very physical with them with the brushing their hair, dominating them. I was dominating them in a way, and they were reacting in a way that I think they were scared. It was not cool. It sucked. It was like a shitty mom moment. And afterwards I was like, what just happened? Like who was I possessed? And I was my mom who I was like, oh my God, I'm my mom, because my mom had four daughters and she was very hectic. She had to work full time. She had to be at work at like 8:30 in the morning. And we had these really manic, harried moments, and she didn't have a lot of resources or the tools or anything, you know, like this language even. And so she was like, would brush the crap out of her hair. And it wasn't loving. It wasn't like a loving. It could have been loving maybe, but it just wasn't. And so I was like, ooh, I'm replicating that. I actually started seeing therapy, to be honest with you. I was like, I need to see a therapist. And so I started to see a therapist, and she was like, why do you have to brush hair? And I was like, girl, I'm Latina. What are you talking about? I don't even know what you're saying right now. Like, what are you saying? I don't have to brush my hair. And I was like, oh, maybe I don't have to brush. And this was like mind-blowing. It blew my mind, because I always thought that I had to brush my hair. And I think I got it twisted in culture, you know, like I got it twisted in a cultural thing. And I don't know, my mom really wanted us to have nice hair and brush it. There was a cultural thing there. But I had to untangle, that's a metaphor, all of this. And now we landed on where I was like, I would like you to brush your hair. Here is a brush and here's detangler. But if you don't want to, they don't. And sometimes it's the same thing with toothbrushing. And it's I'm learning how to navigate this and not just dominate. And just, I guess, to go back to your question, I mean, your point is like, who made this rule? And now that I'm an adult, and I guess I'm in charge, right? Like, what rules do I want? What makes sense for me? And I think that what happens with ancestry, it happens with family, it happens with culture, it happens with greater society, is that we get all of these memos about the way we're supposed to be. And I think that it is super empowering and super healing when you question those memos and decide and get to, maybe you make your own. Maybe, you know what? Like, honestly, in the morning, I put the toothbrush out. And I'm like, dude, brush your teeth. I'm not going to fight about it. There's gum. I don't know. Figure it out. Literally.
And they'll survive. They'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, they're going to get old enough and be like, probably, yeah, I should probably brush my teeth. But I don't know. I mean, I was just like, I'm navigating it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true. And a part of the work that we do in some of our cohort-based work with families and with educators is this like, remembering and reconnection with our language and culture, because we've been disconnected from it in a lot of ways due to assimilation and linguistic oppression, cultural oppression, racism. And while we want to like reconnect to that, we also need to recognize what we want to release. So we have this process of like, what do we want to preserve? What do we want to continue? What do we want to change, adjust? And what do we want to release? Because not everything that is tied to our culture or our upbringing is something that like has to be replicated in the exact same way. And we have the agency to take some things, to change some things, and to leave some things behind.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There is a chapter in my book where I talk about cooking, because I'm not the best cook. I'm just not. I don't, you know, some people are natural cooks. I'm not a natural cook.
You're in good company. Myself. Where am I? I am like, if I could have a chef, like
yeah,
just
me too.
In general,
me all too. My meals. I don't love it the way some people, my sister loves it and they pour through cookbooks. I don't love it in that capacity, but I was like, let me see if I could reconnect, because food is such a way to connect. And so the way that I did is I have a friend here that has a Mexican restaurant. And she's from Mexico. She's from Veracruz, and then went to Mexico City and then came here. And her name is Juanita. And she's like, definitely you can come. And it was beautiful to be with her, because so much did happen in that kitchen. And we would wear those, like, you know, like a mandil, like an old fashioned, like the way your grandma wore those sort of apron, you know, type. Yeah. And she was amazing. And so when I went in there, it was that idea about recipes, right? It was that idea about, I felt like what I got so much was if the metaphor is a recipe, like what do we keep and what do we change? Like we have the power to take a recipe, right? Whether if it's, you know, picadillo tacos or, you know, pozole, whatever. And how do we make it right for us, right? And I think very much in our culture, we have those choices and we have to like navigate like the things that our parents did. It's because they had their own trauma. They had their own reason why they did things that they did. And we're in a different spot and we don't have to do it that way. And a lot of it is releasing. Like what I released, you know, I know this podcast often is about language, right? I did not grow up speaking Spanish. It was not my first language. And I would always get, it was my parents' first language. It was my grandparents' first language. It was the only language that my abuelita spoke, but it was not my first language. A lot was lost in these generations. My name is Robin. I love my name. I love Robin. But I'm constantly like, my grandmother's name was Carmen Maria de Refugia. I could barely say it. And my name's Robin. I'm like, dude, come on. Seriously? You know, but whatever. It is what it is. I love myself. But a lot was lost. Every generation, a lot more is lost. Recipes and medicinas and ways of being. I would always get really mad at my mom, Vero, and I would try to I study now as an adult. I've been studying for a long time. And yet, honestly, I probably can speak at like, I mean, a middle school level really at this point. And there's studies. I had a teacher once that was like, heritage speakers have more trouble than others because there's all this shame. There's all this baggage that I bring. It's not like just say like another person out of our culture, they don't have any baggage. So they're like, okay, but I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to do this and I speak like this and I have all this hangups, whatever. Mm-hmm. I asked my mom, why didn't you teach me Spanish? Like, dude, come on. Like, why didn't you teach me Spanish? And she would get really defensive and she'd say, I wasn't allowed. I would get in trouble. I would go to school and they would yell at us. I would talk to my sisters and my cousins and they would yell at us. And I didn't understand that. I didn't really like intellectually, I didn't get it. Like sometimes we don't get what the things they say. In the study, in the course of writing this book, I found that there was a law. It was systemic. There was a law in Texas. I'm not sure if I'm getting it exactly right, but I think it was from like 1918 to 1969, which is decades, generations. Okay, generations. Completely affected my mom, where it was illegal to speak Spanish in schools in the state of Texas. So what this meant is that my mom would get in trouble. She wasn't kidding. And they could also, I've heard stories of people that my aunt was like, yeah, they would put him in the, they would, there was like a little kid who spoke only Spanish. They would put him in the corner. They would humiliate you. They could hit you. Like there was, it was not only not frowned upon, it was like you were humiliated. Imagine that, right? So what happens is that you don't want to. You began to think that this language of your mother and your grandmother is bad. It must be bad because they're the teachers who's our authority figure as a kid. This is your authority is telling you it's bad. So you internalize it and you think, well, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? When I have a kid, I'm imagining my mom, she's not going to speak any Spanish because I don't want her to be humiliated. I want her to speak perfect English. I want her to go to any room in the world and fit in. And it's like, it was like they got a f***ed up memo. Like they got this f***ed twisted memo because it was wrong. And so now I'm like, oh, I get it. I'm not mad at you. I love you. I'm sad that this happened. And now I have to go back and try to speak Spanish. And so what I'm reclaiming or remembering, because it lives in my body. So if I can just calm down and get over the fear, anger, shame, I can remember the language. I can remember the feeling, right? And then what the releasing is the shame, because it's also, and this sucks, but it's true. Unfortunately, what happens, I've seen it and I don't love it. I don't think it's, I can't say it's the way, is that we shame each other. Mm-hmm. Then we shame each other. One time I made a video about making a Day of the Dead altar. And I made this video and I put it up like on Instagram. And I was like, I'm making a Dia de los... And I'm trying to say the words the way they're supposed to be said. So I'm like, Dia de los Muertos. I'm going to make this ofrenda. And all these comments were like making fun of me. They made fun of me. Latinos, Latinas, Latines. They were like, what is she talking about? She said, ofrenda. And I was so ashamed. I was like, I just can't win. Like, I literally cannot win. I just, and it makes me not want to speak Spanish. It makes me not want to try because it's a straight shoot back to that feeling of, I'm not good enough. I'm not doing this right. This isn't for me. I'm not in it. But I'm like, no, I'm sorry. Step aside, hater. I'm sorry. Love you, culture. Step aside. I said, it's like, that's when the ser has to speak up. And the ser is like, F everybody. I'm sorry. I curse a lot. But what I'm saying is F that, because what I've learned is this is who I am. It's who I am. And nobody gets to decide for us who we are and who we are not. Nobody gets to decide that for you or for me. We do not get to decide that, right? So what I do is I try my best not to judge other people, right? It's like, don't judge and not be judged. And I allow myself, and it's the same thing of the ser, which we talk about. If ser is about, if it feels in your body like spacious and fun and playful and curious, like the kid that wants to put the red and the yellow and the green Play-Doh together, then let me try to speak Spanish and probably get it wrong 100 times. But who cares? Because I'm trying. And if there's some Spanish police out there, like, I'm sorry, give me a citation. Whatever, put me in Spanish jail. Whatever. It's like, I don't care that much anymore. It's like, as you start to get rooted, I think as you start to heal, as you start to understand your history, why people do things, why you do things, why culture does things, you're able to see you're able to see it for what it is. And most of it is just judgment control stemmed from fear. And I give myself a lot of permission and grace around language and culture and this journey, because there's not a right or wrong way to do it.
Yeah, that's so powerful, beautiful. I resonate a lot, have very similar experiences. And as you mentioned, it's like generations, and not just in Texas, like in many parts of the United States, that was the case. And not just with Spanish, but many like indigenous and heritage languages. So this is a pretty, pretty common experience. And I think the question that you pose in your book of, are you acting from susto o ser, really comes into play with this question of speaking your heritage language. Like, am I acting from my ser, which is like this remembering and reconnecting and relationship with my language? Or am I acting from susto, which is maybe paying attention to these comments of what folks are saying and the judgment and the shame and all of that? But it's a lot. It's a lot because it's trauma that we've experienced, that our families have experienced, that have passed down to us. And so it is complicated, and it takes some self-work in order to really step into the language and also the culture and feeling a sense of belonging and feeling a sense of enoughness around that. And that's why I love your book so much, because it's a guide on how to do that, how to stay rooted, and how to be yourself, your full self.
Oh, thank you. And I was like, this happened to me. This is what I did. Here's what I could share, right? And I think that's the most honest thing that anyone can do. Like, I'm certainly not a self-help guru, but that's not the point, actually. Like, my spiritual teacher, we were talking about curanderismo. Curanderismo, as I said, was very daunting to me to practice, because I actually, and it's interesting, it's in terms of language, the word cura, so to be a curandera, right? Like the word cura, there, I thought, okay, that means to cure, right? And I was like, I can't be responsible for that. Like, that felt so weighty. I'm like, what do I know? Like, I'm just one person. Like, that just felt too big. I was like, it feels too big. I found this other definition of cura, and that means to care for. And I was like, and I felt in my body a complete release. That I can do. That I can try to care for myself. I can try to care for my children. I can try to care for the people that come see me. I can try to care for my friends, but I can't cure anybody, right? And I was saying this to my teacher, and she said, you know, people think that curanderismo is about healing people, but it's really about healing yourself so you can help others, right? Wow. Because we can never really heal anybody. It's not even really kind of our job, right? Because we just don't know, like, even though we have such familiarities, Vero, like, we are markedly different people. So I can't tell you what to do, right? Mm-hmm. So all I can ever really do is share my story. And that is an offering. That's my ofrenda. Is like, and if you can see yourself reflected back, and so often, because like 80% of books in America are written by white people, and I think only 8% are written by Latine, we don't see ourselves enough. So if you can see yourself somewhere in there, and maybe throughout the book, you're not going to see yourself, and that's totally fine. But if you could see yourself somewhere in there and it was helpful to you, then it's worth it. Then it's worth it.
Wow, Robin, that's so true. And I'm so grateful for the gift of you sharing your story, for writing this book. And it makes me think back, like, full circle of my, like, when I first moved to New York City and seeing you and your sister represented, business owners, you know, occupying space as Latinas, as Tejanas. And I was a teacher in the Lower East Side at the time, and I was the only Latina teacher with, like, a student population of probably over 80% Latino. And they were like, "You're not Mexican, miss." And I was like, "What do you mean I'm not Mexican?" And they just had all these stereotypes of, like, what Mexicans would or could be. And children at that age just have no filter. And I think that's also important, just your presence and just showing the possibility of what things could be is really, really important. And you were that for me many years ago and continue to be that now. So thank you so much for sharing your story. I want to close out with, what's bringing you joy these days? Just if you could share with our listeners.
Oh, thank you. You know, so much is bringing me joy. And I think even just that question and that consideration is so important, because I feel like for a long time, I worked a lot because I thought that gave me a lot of purpose, or I don't know, I had to be useful in the world. I always thought I had to earn my keep, also because I had a lot of trauma, you know, so overworking and overdrinking for me was a way that I really masked that. And so it's really interesting at this age, where I'm going to almost be 50 soon, that I'm allowing myself joy. That every day I allow joy to have a seat at the table, you know, and it doesn't mean that I'm not worried or anxious or sad or confused or busy. It's just that I literally prioritize it and invite and allow myself to have joy every day. And it's super simple. It's super simple. So the simplest things that bring me joy are my kids. And when I just really, like, just pay attention to them, and I know we're busy. There's sometimes we're busy out there and you're just like, you know, your kids are just, it could be a lot. So I don't want to act like I'm this perfect mom. But when I just sit down and allow myself to listen to them, because they're so wondrous about just, like, everything. Everything is fascinating to them. Like, everything is fascinating to them. That brings me joy. The other day I was saying, because I'm having a big birthday coming up, and I was saying that I want to buy a piece of art, like an original piece of art. And I think that would be, like, a nice to support, you know, an artist and do that for myself. And one of my daughters was like, we were talking about this, and she was really thoughtful. And she said, you know, mom, you can have one of my drawings. I'll give you one, you know, like, you know, she was like, had to consult with, you know, her, like, agent, like her sister, and was like, all right. And I was just like, that brought me such joy, because just, like, her self-worth and her generosity and her thoughtfulness and just, like, taking up space. She's like, yeah, my drawing deserves to be framed to take. I just, every single part of that brings me such joy. And it really invites me to, we sit down, we watercolor, and it's messy, and I'm probably not good at it, but, like, that brings me joy. And honestly, nature always, 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 always brings me joy. So just the birds and the plants and the sun and the moon just remind me that I'm connected to everything and that I always, always, always have that sad and that joy that's unbreakable, unhurtable, and like just like unlimited. Mm.
Thank you so much for sharing your joy with us today. Where can people find you, learn more about your work, learn more about your book?
The best way is to go to robynmoreno.com. So it's robynmoreno.com, because there I have like events and workshops. You could buy my book anywhere books are sold. Also through my website is where I have a newsletter. And that's my favorite way to reach people. I'm also on Instagram on Robyn N. Moreno. But I would say if you sign up for my newsletter, that's usually my favorite way because I send people like longer form messages and musings. And I feel, I would say, more of a community, like we're in community there.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much, Robyn, for joining us, for sharing your gifts, for sharing your perspectives, and for sharing your joy.
Aw, thank you for having me. This has brought me a lot of joy this morning. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.